Welcome to Dolly Reads for You with Dolly Howard, a production of Cosmic Reality Radio. And you are live.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. This is Wednesday, April 10th, 2019. Looking for my light switch. I just realized it was too dark for me. Okay, there we go. You're listening to Dolly Reads for You. And I'm reading Real Encounters, Different Dimensions, and Otherworldly Beings, written by Brad Steiger and Sherry Hansen Steiger. And, I thought there was something I was going to do before we got into this week. I mean, with the book. But I'll be darned if I can remember. That's the way my head goes. My memory. Okay, because I had stopped like the second page in on this new chapter, I'm just going to start the new chapter over so we know what the heck we're talking about, or the book's talking about. All right. Oh, and I wanted to tell y'all I'm taking breaks every half hour now because it helps me. When you read for an hour at a time, have a 5-minute break and then read for another hour, it kind of wears me out. All right. We're at the chapter called Unknown Beings of Terror and the Dark Side. From time to time throughout history, unknown beings arise from the dark side of human consciousness to begin a campaign of terror that becomes contagious and spreads like a phantom virus across an entire nation. Such seems to be the case with Slender Man, a contemporary boogeyman that rages unfettered throughout the United States. I've never heard of Slender Man before. Our friend and colleague, the paranormal pastor Robin Swope, has been monitoring the mental monster gone amok since the beginning of this viral epidemic. Now we start a section called Slender Man, Something Awful This Way Comes by Pastor Robin Swope. He was officially created in an internet contest when the readers of the Something Awful forums were asked to create a paranormal entity in a thread named Create Paranormal Images. The scheme was to create eerie images and use them to trick people on paranormal forums into thinking they were genuine. Users started photoshopping images by adding fake ghosts and other bizarre figures, usually accompanied by an imaginary backstory to make them seem authentic. On June 10, 2009, a user named Victor Surge posted to the thread with two photos and a claim that the entity stalked children. Oh, geez, he's scaring the bejeebers then. Out of everybody, not just kids. The explanation that Surge included with the photos was the haunting detail that the photographs were taken on a day on which 14 children disappeared. He then further explained that the library where the photo was found burned down a week after the pictures were taken. The entity was a shadow creature, overly tall and thin. It had long arms that stretched to inhuman lengths to ensnare its prey. To add to its unearthliness, the fiend had no face. His primary motivation was to kidnap and kill children. Supposedly, he was always seen just before the disappearance of a child or even a mass kidnapping of multiple children. He seemed to prefer silently stalking in fog-enshrouded streets and wooded areas so he could obscure himself from the casual eye. However, children have been able to see him when adults in the vicinity could not. The mythos also stated that children have dreams or nightmares concerning a tall, slender man before their disappearance. The name of Slender Man was born. Quickly, the mythos was expanded. Once Slender Man was seen, he would stalk for the rest of your life. His goal was to slowly drive you insane by appearing in your periphery, eventually threatening you with death. Soon his victims no longer were limited to children. Teenagers and adults were soon to become stalked by the tall, faceless man. The mythos quickly gained some trapping similar to ufology's Men in Black phenomenon, as he appeared in a dark modern suit with white shirt and black tie. He also gained added appendages, which sprout from his side like tree limbs. One UFO site adds, once his arms are outstretched, Slender Man's victims are put into something of a hypnotized state where they are utterly helpless to stop themselves from walking into them. Slender Man is also able to create tendrils from his fingers and back that he uses to walk. Whether Slender Man absorbs, kills, or merely takes his victims to an undisclosed location or dimension is also unknown, as there are never any bodies or evidence left behind in his wake to deduce a definite conclusion. So it's a mystery all the way through. Some say the Slender Man myth is inspired by archaic archetypes of folklore, like death stalking the plague-riddled inhabitants of medieval Europe, as depicted in Hans Holbein's 16th century woodcuts of the Dance of Death. But recently, the mythos and folklore have begun to manifest into real life. On November 6, 2009, a young man called Coast to Coast AM, the popular late-night radio program, to report an encounter his girlfriend had with an entity resembling Slender Man, prompting a flurry of listeners to call to relate their own stories of Slender Man-type encounters. I, too, have received stories of various encounters of Slender Man. The first came in August of 2009 from a woman named Joanne. From childhood, I have seen this demonic figure. He is a tall shadow. He has no face, but he has long arms. Out of the corner of my eye on certain nights, I see him, and his arms seem to be reaching out to me. And when I turn to look at him, the thing is gone. I have the real feeling that if I don't turn around to look at him, his arms will catch me up and I will die. Joanne then described some personal details of her life that accompanied the Slender Man appearance, which included child abuse and neglect at a young age. Close to the end of her letter, she made the chilling announcement, I am afraid that he is stalking me, and that one day I will not be able to catch him trying to snatch me up. This fills me with such fear, words can't describe. Sometimes I think I'm going nuts. I feel like he's going to get me when I don't expect it. Some nights I can't sleep. Noises outside make me jump. When the wind cranks up and things start to rattle, I am so scared. I need help. I responded to Joanne and gave her some simple prayers and commands for the entity to leave her alone. I have tried to contact her numerous times, but I never get a reply. One part of me feels it might be a psychotic incident with prolonged effects on her mental state. But when I started to receive other similar letters, I began to think twice. I received an anonymous comment on my blog dated January 12, 2010, that in part reads, "My name is blank. I am being hunted by a shadow creature. It is tall and thin and tries to catch me in its long arms. I saw it in a dream, and now it is real. All I see in the face are two eyes, and when I look in them, those arms try to get me." See, we create our own realities. Somebody created this Slender Man, and other people are buying into the story. And a few more recent stories he's going to tell us, or there they are. "I am now 16 years old, and I have never heard of Slender Man until now. What really freaks me out is that I had one of these dream experiences about Slender Man. I was 5 or 6, and I was having a dream of people I never knew or saw playing a prank on me at a cemetery. There was one person up in a tree recording everything while I was walking. They buried a jack in a box, so I couldn't see it. But when I did, a hand came out of the box. The scary thing about the hand was it had long, unnatural, slender fingers that were trying to get a grip on my whole leg. It scared me so much that I fought back and ran, searching my way out of the cemetery to the gates. Before I could reach the gates, I saw to my left a moving shadow. I stopped before the gate to watch it slowly moving to stand in front of me. When I looked up, the shadow had become a man wearing a suit, but he had no face, just a large grin. To me, it looked like he had a cloak on, but on a second look, the folds of the cloak actually looked like arms. He tried reaching for me, but before he could, I woke up, screamed, then ran to my parents' room. I slept in my parents' room for about 3 weeks until I didn't have the dreams anymore. In those 3 weeks, I had that dream over and over. It would continue where it left off, showing me more of the suited man. I stopped having the dreams, but I never forgot them. Even now, I have a feeling that I am being watched, and when I do, I automatically think about that dream. I don't know why, but I just do. Was that man, the Slender Man, the so-called myths say? I only learned of the Slender Man today from a friend. Now I'm afraid if that man in my dreams was the Slender Man, truly trying to get me, or if he just loves to scare the hell out of people." Here's another story from a 13-year-old girl. "That reminds me, one time my cousin Nancy, she's a year older than I am, and we were together most of our lives. She came to live with us for a while even. But anyway, when she was at her parents' house and I was visiting there, because my Aunt Lois used to watch me when we lived in Toledo, she'd watch my sister and I when my mom and dad were at work. So I'm making a long story out of this short one. Stop it, Dolly. So anyway, we were at Nancy's house, and my cousin Nancy, and we took a walk. Well, we ran across a cemetery we didn't know was there, so of course, we want to explore. And it was in the afternoon, so we went in and we were walking around the cemetery, reading all the headstones and making stories up about the people and scaring the poop out of each other and that kind of thing. Just girl thing, scaring each other in a cemetery with stories. And we realized, oh my gosh, the sun was going down. It was dusk. And we had seen a sign on the gate when we walked in the cemetery that it closes at dusk. So we were scared to death we were going to get locked in that cemetery all night long. And then we'd be in big trouble with our parents. And so we thought we were going toward the gate to get out. We were lost. We were completely lost. We would get to a fence, but it didn't have the gate, and we tried to follow the fence, and then we turned around, followed the fence the other way, and oh my gosh, we were scared that we're getting in trouble, not from the cemetery, but from our parents. And eventually, we did find the gate and went running toward it as the guy was going to lock it up. So then we ran all the way home. We didn't even stop and talk to the man. Ran all the way home, and of course, we got in trouble because we weren't home on time. The lights had come on and been on for a while because our clue was when the street lights come on, you hightail it home. And that's the way I grew up. No matter where you were, street lights come on, you hightail it home. So we got in a lot of trouble for that. Got grounded and spanked and all that. But that story about this person reminded me of that story. So here is another from a 13-year-old girl. I'd rather leave myself nameless, but here it goes. I've been seeing this thing ever since I was about 8 years old. Just last night, I remember I was having a nightmare about Slender Man. The only thing I remember was waking up after his arms started coming after me. When I read about the other girl who got abused when she was young, I can relate. I still am somewhat abused, but it doesn't happen as often. Oh, yeah, she's 13. Okay. I was taking a picture outside today, and Slender Man appeared. He was just so casually standing in the background. I soon felt really sick after seeing him, so I went inside. Around 4, my mom told me to look outside to see if my brother's girlfriend's car was pulling in. Slender Man was there, and he snapped his head in my direction. At 5, my brother, his girlfriend, and some of his friends went for a walk and said they saw somewhat of a tall man standing next to my window. When they looked at him again, he was gone. I'm not sure if I should take this as an attempt to come after me or simple paranoia. Is this some sort of fiction become reality because of the overworking of imagination and the psychosomatic power of a projected entity, such as Tulpa? Or is it a demonic entity that has taken on the guise of an internet mythos to feed on fear and destroy the minds of those that fall into its deception? I was about to go with the latter until recently, when I heard a few stories that placed the Slender Man in paranormal experiences before the mythos was ever created. They have a picture of it here. Kind of looks like a spider with a man in place of the body. The first came from a coworker who told me that around 2002, at a previous place of employment, she had made friends with a woman who had paranormal encounters. One of the most chilling was in the mid-1990s, when she awakened in the middle of the night to see a tall, dark, and thin humanoid figure at the end of her bed. As it reached out its arms, its fingers elongated to an inhuman length, and reached toward her bed. Her head. Boy, I butchered that one. She was paralyzed. Even though she tried to scream and move, she could not. As the tendril fingers wrapped around her head, she lost consciousness. She awakened that morning feeling very sluggish. Shortly after the terrible night, she became ill, had frequent headaches and nausea, and could not sleep. So she sought medical help, and as a consequence, she had an X-ray done of her head and upper torso. The doctors found that a small metallic object had been implanted into the base of her skull. When the doctors tried to remove the foreign object, they found that it had become entangled into the central nervous system at the spinal cord, and it was too risky to remove. The woman showed the operation scar to my coworker as proof, but my coworker still did not believe the story, which irritated her friend very much. The friend then brought her X-ray to work and showed my coworker the proof. A small metallic object had been implanted at the base of her skull in such a location that made it inoperable. Was this woman an alien abduction and implant survivor? At first look, that seems the conclusion. But the appearance and after effects of the encounter matches the Slender Man mythos so closely that it makes one ponder. In fact, after telling the coworker about Slender Man, she was shocked and a bit unnerved. It fit perfectly. But why the implant? Perhaps to follow a victim the rest of his or her life? A few months ago, I put a request out on my blog for any readers who had a Slender Man experience to write in and tell me about it. It so happens that some of the responses predate the invention of the mythos. First, from a man in the Midwestern United States who wishes to be anonymous because of his position in society. Dear Pastor, I stumbled onto your website much by accident and was intrigued by the Slender Man story. I have vivid memories from childhood regarding a throng of these people emerging from the woods near our house, which was about a quarter mile from the edge of a large state forest in blank. It's not telling us where. As a child growing up in the 1950s, my mom always warned me about gypsies who occasionally made their way through our neighborhood. Even so, I was intrigued nevertheless. I recall one occasion quite vividly. I was about 4 or 5 years old, playing in the backyard. I recall going into the garage, which was separate from our house. I became aware of a swishing sound, like someone walking through tall grass. I glanced out the garage window and saw an entire line of these slender people coming out of the woods just behind our neighbor's house. They were heading our way. I was momentarily frozen. What did I do now? Fearful the gypsies might carry me away, I retreated into a corner of the garage and watched the procession through a crack in the wall. This was something out of storybook land. They were all slender, but some were taller than others. A few wore scarves, but their garb appeared drab with colors faded. There were a few slenders of small stature, whom I took to be children. They were holding the hands of the ones wearing scarves. I could not see their faces, but I recall their fingers were exceedingly long. When they crossed into our backyard, they continued walking single file in zombie-like fashion. When they reached the coal shed, which was behind the house, but about 10 feet from the garage, they divided into two lines. One line went between the coal shed and the house. The other passed between the coal shed and the garage. They continued in their slow, relentless pace, walking past the side of our house, down the road and up the hill, in their slow, plodding fashion. As soon as they were out of sight, I rushed into the house. My mother immediately locked all the doors and drew all the window shades until my dad came home from work. Over the intervening years, I have often wondered about that day. Who were those strange people? Where did they come from? Where were they going? Your photo triggered recollections of that afternoon in the garage, but I saw more than just a shadow person. I saw the whole clan. In another story from Jason in Ohio. Yeah, when I was little, we were always told, beware of the gypsies, because we had gypsies who would come through the neighborhood. And this was in Toledo, in the house that my mom grew up in, with her brothers and sister and mother and father. Well, my Uncle Buddy and his wife, my Aunt Shirley, bought that house from Grandma and Grandpa, and they built a new house. So I would stay at my cousin Gloria's house, Uncle Buddy and Aunt Shirley's daughter. And they would, Aunt Shirley especially, would always say, don't let the gypsies in. Because we actually had gypsies go through the neighborhood, and they were looking for people who weren't home so they could go in and rob them. This was a common thing that got reported to the police all the time. And so this story reminds me of that. I hadn't thought of it in years. Beware of the gypsies. I haven't heard of gypsies. I haven't heard of gypsies doing that anymore lately. Well, since I grew up. So it's an interesting story to me. And then he says this was in Ohio because my parents were born in Toledo, Ohio. And that's where I was born. And then we moved when I was in the third grade. So there's a real live gypsy story for you. And another from Jason in Ohio. My 22-year-old brother used to have dreams about Slender Man and a 7-year-old, and he doesn't even know about the Slender Man myth. We were talking about weird experiences in our old house, and he started telling me about his dreams about a tall guy without a face. He also said that once when he was in the house by himself, he was at the other end of the hallway, and he saw a creature similar to that description lean out of the door of his bedroom and look at him. And a final short story from another individual who chooses to remain anonymous. At times I think I see him out in the streets, but it's happened way too many times for it to be a coincidence. So what is happening? Encounters of a being similar to Slender Man have been happening for decades. What shall we make of this? I first read about Slender Man in his full mythical glory about 2 years ago before piecing together the jigsaw pieces. And even then I was unnerved, as I have not been in many years. Is there something in the dark? I hope it is not the stalking Slender Man. So we have a new section to start, and I could do that after we take a break. Maybe. Nancy,
I got so into the Slender Man, I completely spaced out on what I was doing. I forgot you were live, everything. My God, that's a... Because I had heard about this guy before.
You have?
Yes. I'm trying to remember. Somebody on Kev Baker was talking about him. Somebody that, you know, is fairly known, I think. Or maybe it was on Whitley. But anyway, it's such a weird story. And now you're telling me that it wasn't because somebody made it up. Somebody told the story in a made-up, you're supposed to make it up. Maybe they had gone through it, actually, and were just telling the story.
That could be too, yeah.
Oh, anyway.
Because I was thinking, well, so many people read it and bought into it that they made it a living thing.
Yeah, that's what it kind of feels like. You know what I'm saying? It's like, yeah. Weird. Yeah. Okay, so let's just do Natalie Evolutionary Feet. It'll get you going again.
Okay.
Oh, Slender Man, huh? You're back.
Thank you. I shut my door. it's about time for the screaming little booger from next door to come out. She doesn't have an inside voice. She only has the top of her lungs voice.
Didn't you have problems with your last neighbors in Venice? They were all...
Oh, they were druggies.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah, they sold drugs and got in fights and things like that. And the ones who lived there before, the druggies, they had the bad dogs, and they were also druggies. But they had the bad dogs that attacked the police and all. Yeah, seems like I always end up moving next to interesting people. Keeps me going. Keeps my blood moving. So it's a good thing. Okay, the new thing. Here we go with a new one. Sightings of Stick Man in Middle Tennessee by Sandy Nichols. Oops, did I push something? I hope not. This is strange, I thought to myself as I read the email reply from Kathy Brockway. I was sure I had included Kathy's name on the list of people when I sent out two previous emails describing my other two sightings of the creature I had recently begun calling Stickman. Oh, well, it didn't matter. I would simply reply back to her and share what I had told the others. Little did I know, when I hit the send button, that Kathy would write back and inform me that she had also seen this creature not far from my home, but nearly 2 years before. That would be kind of frightening. Kathy had received the previous emails I had sent out, but in those emails, I never referred to the creature as Stickman. In my email describing my third sighting, I simply got tired of not having a name for the creature, so I now simply nicknamed it Stickman. Such a name seemed appropriate because to me, he looked like a cross between a walking stick and a skeleton. Kathy then put two and two together and knew that I was describing a similar creature to the one that she had seen. Kathy had contacted me through the research site, Alien Research Group, in late 2009 because of her interest in various aspects of the paranormal. She was looking for someone she could trust enough to share some of her strange experiences with. Several emails back and forth and numerous phone conversations in the ensuing months that followed assured Kathy that I was someone whom she could trust. In order to help her understand some of her experiences better, I believed that Kathy also needed to hear perspectives other than mine. Kathy shared with me that she had also had some ghostly encounters, so I arranged a get-together at my home for her to meet two of my very good friends, Brett and Gina Oldham of Halo Paranormal. I swear I've heard of these people before. Huh, interesting. Not too long after meeting Brett and Gina for the first time, they introduced me to a new spirit communication method that they had devised using the ghost box. I had heard about the ghost box being used in ghost investigations for years, but frankly, I was never impressed with the results that other groups were getting. But after agreeing to participate in several ghost box sessions with Brett and Gina, I came away convinced that the method that they employed was second to none. By using this new method, I believed that Kathy would come away from the session with a better understanding of her ghostly experiences. In time, I would also introduce Kathy to Brent and Joan Raines, as well as Chandra Harrison. Soon, Kathy would become a permanent member of our group, of our special group, conducting spirit box sessions and investigations. The first ghost box session with Kathy was scheduled for a Saturday evening, and everything went according to plan. Kathy bonded well with Brett and Gina, and during and after the session, she was amazed and excited that such a process to communicate with the other side could work so well. It was late by the time the session was over, and soon Brett and Gina headed home. Shortly thereafter, Kathy departed. It would not be until March 2013 that I would learn of Kathy's sighting of Stickman on this May 2010 night. The part of my description that caught Kathy's attention the most was where I had described how part of the creature seemed to glow in a mixture of three different colors. In subsequent emails, then by phone, I learned the full details of her sighting, and she used some of the same words to describe the creature that I had thought of but not yet used. Within a few seconds after Kathy had left my driveway, she reached the end of the cul-de-sac that I lived on and turned right onto Saddle Springs Boulevard. She had barely turned right when her thoughts changed from the ghost box session to that of planned events with her family the next day. Another 100 yards or so down the road, these thoughts faded as the headlights from her van illuminated what she believed to be at first a severely malnourished, oversized deer. This deer was standing just off the road next to a driveway. As she drew even closer, she began to wonder if she was seeing a deer at all or something entirely different. When I first saw him, he was down on all fours. His head was shaped like something like a chihuahua's, but without any type of protruding muzzle or snout. She recalled, it was more flat looking. As I got a closer look, I could see no skin or hair covering the creature's body. Its arms, legs, and trunk looked more skeleton-like than anything else. The bone structure was no more round than the cardboard core on Christmas wrapping paper. And the whole body had this really strange yellow, red, and orange glow that was like a cross between translucent neon and opaque. The glow was really hard to describe. I could not tell if the creature was self-illuminating or its body was just reflecting on my car headlights. Just a minute, I'm being told I need to breathe more. Guess who's here? Hi, Dave. I remember. He's saying, do you remember when you first started reading and I told you you had to breathe more? Yes, I remember. He wants me to do it again. Okay. I promise I'll do it. Okay. And besides, I'm doing a good job. Thank you. Besides that, I'm doing a good job. Are you going to stick around? Yes, he's sticking around. Oh, boy, there's his chair. He's sticking around. He's got his comfy chair. Okay, so feel free to stop me anytime. I know you do. Feel free. So back to the story. We're talking about her headlights. She caught this reflection in her headlights. She was also concerned that whatever this was, it would suddenly bolt across the road. So she quickly applied her brakes and slowed her vehicle down to a crawl. This was a very wise decision, for suddenly this creature reared itself up on two legs and ran not more than a foot in front of her vehicle across the road. But using the word ran is a rather understated based on Kathy's experience. Is rather understated based on Kathy's experience. He moved so quickly that it was almost like a blur, she explained. And there was something else. Even though he was a blur, I could still see his form. But I could not see the upper half of his head. It had not disappeared, but was just hidden from my line of sight because it was above where the roof and front window converge. During the rest of my drive home, I was having this back and forth battle going through my thoughts. My logic was trying to convince me that it was only a deer, but at the same time, my logic was also telling me I had witnessed something amazing and very strange, something unknown. After hearing the full details of Kathy's experience, I was convinced that she and I had witnessed the same creature with only the slightest of physical variations. The first sighting. It was a mild night in late summer of 2012 as I stood in the parking area of my driveway. As I waited for the arrival of Brett and Gina to conduct an impromptu ghost box session, I gazed westward as the last rays of the waning sun were setting on the horizon. Waning sun. I had always been fascinated with the time of dusk. It is that magical time when the light of day and the darkness of the night are equal in their opposite brilliance. And so it was during this momentary truce between the safety of the light and the eerie sounds and shadows of the dark that I saw the creature for the first time. He appeared suddenly, standing upright, a mere 2 feet off the side of the road, facing the road and not more than 150 feet in front of me. It was as if he had just materialized out of thin air, which, in fact, is exactly what he did. Remember that guy that I kept seeing in my bathroom? And Nancy and Dave were telling, or Nancy and Walt were telling me to get rid of it and talk with my angels. And so I did, and I talked with Dave. Well, Dave is reminding me when I was reading this how the creature just suddenly disappeared. He says, that's what happened with your bathroom man. We made sure he suddenly disappeared. I haven't seen it since. I haven't. Thank you, Dave. I did thank you, you know. He knows, but he wanted to remind me. He must be in one of those fun moods. Where was I? He disappeared. Okay. He appeared suddenly standing upright, a mere 2 feet off the side of the road, facing the road and not more than 150 feet in front of me. It was as if he had just materialized out of thin air, which in fact is exactly what he did. He was well over 7 feet tall. His arms and legs looked more like the bones of a skeleton than anything else, and their size matched Kathy's description to a tree. They were jet black in color. His arms and legs were long and jointed about halfway down, with his arms appearing to be slightly longer than his legs. While standing upright and still, with his arms hanging straight down, The end of his long, slender fingers reached down to the halfway point of what seemed like the knee joint and the foot. His feet were long and slender, as were what seemed to be his toes. His legs were attached to the side of the torso at the very bottom, while the arms were attached to the side at the top of the torso, much in the same way as human arms are attached. His torso was just a smidge bigger than his arms and legs, but unlike the full-body illumination that Kathy experienced, only the torso of the creature was glowing with that same neon, translucent, opaque mixture of color. Since no headlights were shining on the creature during this sighting, it was apparent that the creature somehow had the ability to self-illuminate various body parts. Wouldn't that be interesting? As I stood there and soaked up the characteristic details of this creature, I was hoping that Brett and Gina would turn down my street to witness what I was witnessing. But after about 5 to 6 seconds of standing upright and still, the creature began to move, but in a slow motion sort of way. He raised his right hand and moved it forward, and his foot came to rest halfway across the road. Oh my gosh. He then moved his left foot, and it came to rest 2 feet on the other side of the road. As soon as the right leg caught up with the left leg, the creature simply disappeared. I was more than just astonished at what I had just seen. The creature... Oh, one of my cats is being sick. I apologize if you can hear it. Are you okay, Sagey? Oh, I feel bad for you. No, she's not done. Oh, I hope you can't hear it. All right, Sagey. Mommy will get it in a little while. You go lay down.
Was it a hairball?
No, she always does this. There she is. She's okay. No, it's not a hairball. She's done this since birth. I mean, since I got her, and I got her at 4 weeks. I don't know why she does it. And I thought at first it was hairball, but then it happened to happen at the vet's, and not hairball, just upset stomach, evidently.
Poor baby.
I know. I always feel so bad for her. And then I'm gagging while she's doing I'll clean it up the next break.
Or wait for Annette.
she won't do it.
Oh, okay.
She doesn't do cats.
I understand.
I do cats. She said, you better hope they die before you do, because they're going to be gone. Jeez. I worry about that with my little babies. So back to this guy with the good creature disappeared. What time is it? Oh, okay. I was more than just astonished at what I had just seen. The creature needed only 2 steps to cross a 28-foot distance. This meant that the stride of each step was 14 feet long. Brett and Gina arrived at my home just minutes later. I'm watching her. It's okay, lay down. You're okay. Lay down. Okay. Brett and Gina arrived at my home just minutes later, and I shared with them what I had just witnessed. Brett's response was serious but whimsical at the same time. With what we have witnessed here at the Paranormal Palace, there is no telling what hangs around here. What I figured was the last of the strange sightings for the night wasn't kind of, As it turned out, my two black Labradors witnessed what we assumed to be the same creature. After the spirit box session, I walked the Oldhams to their vehicle. Gina was already sitting in the car on the passenger side, while Brett was standing in front of the open door of the driver's side. They had parked on the left side of the parking area with their car facing up the street. I was standing on the back right side of the car, sharing one more thing with Brett before they left. My younger lab, Carolina, was sitting on the driveway some 10 feet behind and to the left of the car. Savannah, the older lab, was standing in between me and the right side passenger door, looking into the car. At first, I thought she was looking at Gina moving around, but instead, her stare was fixated through the front window at something in front of the car. I wondered what caught her attention, but I could not see anything. Suddenly, she bolted around me to the left side of the car, stopped, and assumed a defensive position just to the left of the open driver's door. Her front end was down, her back end was up. Her hackles were raised back to her tail, and she was growling and barking at the exact same time at something in the side yard. We looked and could see nothing. In the 8 years we have had her from puppy stage, she had never ever once shown this type of aggressive behavior. She and Carolina are two of the most gentle and loving dogs we have ever owned. Everybody just loves them. But on this night, there was no mistaking her intent. She was totally pissed at something. She stayed in this posture for about 30 seconds, when suddenly she jumped back about a foot as if something had lunged at her. But then she immediately reset herself back into her aggressive, defensive posture. Brett and I sensed that she was not going to jump back again. But then she did something else totally unexpected. She moved to her right, beside Brett and a little in front of him. Then she began to back Brett up toward the back of the car. It was so obvious that she was now trying to protect Brett, since he was the closest to whatever she was upset with. Also around this time, Carolina had moved up just to the left of Savannah. Then, just as unexpected as before, both dogs shot through the small but thick bushes that lined the mulch bed in front of the car and into the side yard. About halfway across, they both turned to the right and headed toward the backyard, with Savannah continuing to bark and growl. They stopped at the back property line where it merges with the woods behind my home. Several minutes later, they both returned to the car. While we tried to figure out what they were after, Savannah and Carolina suddenly bolted again, but this time into the front yard to the left of the car and straight through a thick cluster of rose bushes in the side mulch bed. They crossed the street, stopped, began sniffing the air, and after a minute or so returned to the car. Nothing else occurred for 10 minutes, and Brett and Gina finally departed. One reason we do so many ghost box sessions at my home is because the ghosts and spirits, and apparently other entities, are attracted to me, as well as to the history of the area. The ghosts and spirits also seem to enjoy us communicating with them. Throughout the years, Savannah and Carolina have gotten used to the regular spirit manifestations that roam my home, and they only bark at any new ones that show up, but then they get used to them as well. It made no sense to me, Brett or Gina, why my dogs would get that upset at one of these entities. Their normal reaction to the ghosts and spirits was not Savannah's reaction that night. Our best guess is that the stick man returned and my dogs just did not like him. Ready to start a new section after the break.
Okie dokie. And you're alive.
Oh, that's nice. I really like that. While I was gone, my computer decided to set a timer for me to relax in 5 minutes. My computer sort of went wild, and it pulled up another screen I didn't have any idea was there. I don't know if Dave's messing with me or what. I've never seen that thing. It says it's a timer to remind me to relax in 5 minutes.
Well, you just got that while that song was playing?
Yeah. Yes. I had gotten up because Sadie had puked a couple more times, so I got up and cleaned it up. And I came back, and there it was on the computer. And he's definitely sitting there in that corner with his chair. What a shit.
Maybe it was Gaia that did it. I always think that that's Gaia singing to me.
No, he's taking credit.
He always takes credit. Ow, hey, you just slapped me. Damn, how can he do that from you to me?
I don't know. He's having fun. He's in one of those moods, Nancy.
Oh, gosh.
He says, well, he had listened to me tape the last Dolly Shares, and he got such a kick out of it. And he finally got the time to come and play with me.
Well, that's coming up after Jamie's show. So at 7 o'clock, you'll be able to hear Dolly's good show because Dave couldn't even interrupt her.
No, because I said to him, "Now you say anything because it's supposed to be his show and my show." And I said, "Well, anytime you say something, say something." And so we get all done, and I get the recording turned off. He said, "It was so funny, I couldn't even talk." Such a stinker. I need a drink. All right. Now we are to the second sighting. I was just taking it slow and easy down Arno Road, heading home, while taking an alternative route and avoiding the construction work on Interstate 65, just south of Franklin, Tennessee. The cool air seeping into my car from the driver's side open window felt refreshing after being on my feet all day, volunteering at the church that my wife attends. This volunteerism was an annual October event for me to help the church prepare for its biggest fundraiser of the year. I enjoyed helping out, and I liked the people with whom I worked. Never once throughout the years had any of these folks criticized me or thought me evil for doing my paranormal research and investigations. Well, that's nice. As a matter of fact, some would even send me emails every once in a while sharing information that they thought I might find interesting and or useful to my writings. Oh, that reminds me. I got another story. This happened last night and today. Russell's talking to my cousin Nancy, and he says to her, Mom's been holding my dong. Oh, my gosh. What he was referring to is he bought some of the bongs. It's money. I forgot from which country. China, maybe? I don't know. He bought Vietnamese? Maybe? I don't know. He bought this money called bongs. B like boy, O-N-G-S. Well, I got confused on what he was saying, and I was calling them dongs. D like dog, O-N-G. So he just off the top of his head, he's talking to my cousin, and he tells her, yeah, well, I finally got the dongs. Mom was... However he said it, it was Mom was holding his dong. Oh, my gosh. So my cousin Nancy is the one who was going to do an intervention for me if it was needed. And then she just kind of lost it with me holding Russell's dong and says, oh my gosh, what? I have to call her right away and talk to her. Oh my gosh, here goes an intervention for sure. Russell set me up really good. He thought that was funny. He had to share that with me just before we started the show. He was laughing so hard he was crying. He couldn't even talk. I didn't think it was so funny because I'm the one who's in peril of receiving an intervention. He did explain it to Nancy finally. Thank God. Okay, so here we are. As a matter of fact, some would even send me emails once in a while sharing information that they thought I might find interesting and or useful to my writings. But my focus was not on these thoughts as I continued down the road. Instead, I was remembering the amazing UFO sighting that my wife and I had witnessed almost a year before to the day on this same road. And by coincidence, driving home from the church after the completion of the fundraiser. Little did I know that just a couple of miles down the road from the area of that UFO experience, I would have my second sighting of Stickman. I was a bit surprised at the lack of cars on this country road. Usually there is residual traffic at 7:30 p.m., heading home from the mall area located just north of Franklin. Franklin's where Two Dog lives, if you remember Two Dog from WSR. Hold on a minute. Okay. The only car to be seen was one about a mile in front of me. As it turned out, the driver of this vehicle was driving even slower than I. And within several minutes, I had caught up with his car. Since this was a country road with farmland and scattered homes, I did not want to make the driver nervous by tailgating. So I kept about a 50-yard distance between us. We soon passed the location of my UFO sighting, and we were approaching the crossroad of Paytonsville, Trinity, when the driver clicked on his right-hand turn signal. Believing that the driver was getting ready to turn on this crossroad west, I slowed down. But then I had to slow down even more. Instead of turning at the crossroad, the driver began a very slow turn into a side driveway off of Arno at the home on the corner that faced the crossroad. As soon as the driver had fully entered the driveway, I turned on the high beams of my car, and that is when I saw Stickman for the second time. He was standing in a vacant field that was located on the left facing Arno. He was almost in line with the driveway that the car had turned into. Unlike my first sighting, he was not glowing on any parts of his body. His entire body color was jet black, except for his head, which was a shade lighter than the rest. A few seconds later, he began to move toward Arno Road, and his forward progress indicated that he was moving a bit faster than the first time I saw him. Though he was not moving as fast as Kathy Brockway had described, he seemed to be jogging in slow motion. He crossed Arno in two steps, not more than 50 feet in front of me. My car is a newer model with the new headlights, so he was illuminated as if he were standing in the middle of a spotlight without the blurring effect. Once across Arno, he continued to move west in front of a three-railed black fence line that was property separation boundary from the house on the corner and the one right before it. Even though the creature and the fence were close to the same black color, I could still see the creature fairly well, even though he was now a full 100 yards or so from my car. Then he suddenly just vanished right before my eyes, just as before. After Stickman had vanished, I looked to see if the driver of the other car had possibly seen the creature. Even though the car was at the end of the driveway and its taillights indicated it was in park, the driver had not emerged from the car. I considered, for the briefest moment, turning into the driveway and talking to the driver, but since it was night, I thought it best not to. Yeah, especially if you're in the country. There was no doubt that this was the exact same creature that I had seen a few months earlier, and probably the same creature that Kathy had witnessed. Now we have third sighting. In the ensuing months, I began an intensive search of the internet, looking for any reported sightings, photos, or illustrations of this creature. I found no photos or illustrations except for drawings of the typical cartoon type stick man. But I did find a couple of videos on YouTube with the headings of stick man and unknown creatures. These videos supposedly showed two strange creatures captured at night. Hold on. Okay. These videos supposedly showed two strange creatures captured at night on infrared by CCTV systems. After viewing the videos, I came to the conclusion that the supposed creatures were no more than a couple of people walking on stilts covered by white sheets. Serious researchers and investigators are all too aware that such videos only add fire to the skeptics and debunkers who claim that anything reported as paranormal is the result of trickery, lies, or someone's imagination. But there is no doubt in either Kathy's or my mind that what we witnessed was a real and unknown creature, rarely reported and seen. We both considered ourselves lucky to have seen him, but I was to have one more sighting. As I relaxed in the warmth of the bubbling water of my hot tub, I could see that the nighttime sky was crystal clear and afforded me the opportunity to do a little sky watching. I looked in all directions, hoping to catch another glance at of the mysterious lights that would suddenly appear from time to time in the sky or in the farm fields, vacant lots, and woods that surrounded my home. But on this particular night, it was Stickman that caught my attention. When I first saw him, he was less than 5 feet away from me. Jeez! Motionless. And not more than 10 feet away from the side pool gate. I could not discern much detail of his body in the darkness, but his form was unmistakable, with the light-colored background of the night sky illuminating the ground behind him. He seemed to be several feet taller than in my first two sightings, but within a second or two, I knew the reason why. He began moving slowly toward the back right corner of my pool house slash office, some 20 feet from where I first spotted him. When he reached the corner of my pool house, the top of his head was several inches above the height of the gutter, which is just inches shy of 12 feet above the ground. At this point, I had a clear view of him through the pool fence gate. he was gliding effortlessly through the air, some 4 feet above the ground. Oh my gosh! And evidently I lost sight of him as he moved totally behind the pool house. In most of my alien-type abduction experiences, it was nothing for the aliens to float me through the air from one location to another. Apparently, this creature had the same ability. I also got to thinking of how strange it was that he also had the ability to change his color. But after thinking about this further, it did not seem that strange after all. There are several animal species here on Earth, both on land and in the sea, that have this ability. So I guess in nature, wherever nature happens to be, that there is nothing to prohibit an unknown species from having similar abilities. Side note. As I was in the process of writing this account, I was contacted by someone who lives 50 miles away from me, who was in search of answers for her abduction experiences. As we chatted on the phone, this person just happened to mention seeing this strange creature that she had never seen before. From the description given, it seems very possible that this person had also encountered Stickman. New section. The Menacing Three Men in Black. I need a drink. Hold on. I needed a big drink that time. See, I'm breathing, I'm relaxing. Don't get fussy with me. While the internet blogs and the Blog Talk radio programs are currently dispensing frightening tales of the black-eyed kids and Slender Man, it remains to be seen whether these contemporary memes, or is it memes? I don't know. It's M-E-M-E-S. I don't even know what memes is. Anyway, contemporary memes of terror will approach the longevity of UFO research's most persistent menace, the three men in black. And in parentheses, he has M-I-B. Men in black, evidently. Ever since organized flying saucers research began in the early 1950s, a large number of UFO investigators have claimed to have suffered personal harassment and unusual accidents. Some researchers have even attributed mysterious deaths of their fellow investigators to the ominous trio. At the very least, UFO researchers have said that sinister voices have whispered threats over the telephone and warned certain researchers to discontinue all inquiries into the UFO mystery. Now that would make me want to do it more. The template for the appearance of the MIB occurred in September 1953, when three agents of an alleged silence group made their first in-person visit to Albert K. Bender, who had organized an international flying saucer bureau. According to ufologist Gray Barker, Bender had received certain data. According to ufologist Gray Barker, Bender had, try reading that. Jeez. Bender had received certain data that he felt provided the missing pieces for a theory concerning the origin of flying saucers. Bender wrote down his thesis and sent it off to a friend he felt he could trust. When the three men appeared at Bender's door, one of them held that letter in his hand. The MIB told Bender that he was the only one among many researchers who had been able to stumble upon the correct answer to the flying saucer, Enigma. Oh boy. Then they filled him in on the details. Bender became ill. He was unable to eat for 3 days. UFO investigators Dominic Lucchesi and August C. Roberts, two men whom Brad Steiger came to know well, called on Bender and encouraged him to break his silence concerning the mysterious men in black. But Bender told them that the MIB had been pretty rough with him. Two men did all the talking, and the other kept watching me all the time they were here. He didn't take his eyes off me. Bender went on to say that when people found out the truth about flying saucers, there would be dramatic changes in all things. Science especially would suffer a major blow. Political structures would topple. Mass confusion would reign. Roberts and Lucchesi kept chipping away at Bender's wall of silence, but to most of their queries, they received only a noncommittal, "I can't answer that." In 1962, Bender declared that he would at last tell his story to the world in Flying Saucers and the Three Men. This perplexing volume served only to confuse serious researchers, as it told of Bender's astral projection to a secret underground saucer base in Antarctica that was manned by male, female, and bisexual creatures. The questions that have remained to plague UFO investigators ever since were many. Excuse me, hold on just a minute. Goodness sake. Okay, here's questions. Were Bender's experiences really of a physic nature? Was his book deliberately contrived to hide the true nature of his silencing? Had the whole experience been clothed in an extended metaphor that might yield certain dues to the perceptive researcher? Had Bender created the incident out of whole cloth to gain publicly for books and lectures? On June 24, 1967, Dominic Lucchesi told Steiger that Bender seemed to be a changed man after the three men in black had visited him. It was as if he had been lobotomized, Lucchesi said. He was scared, and he later suffered from tremendous headaches, which he said were controlled by them. Whenever he would think of breaking his silence, one of these terrific headaches would just about knock him out. The three men in black shut him up, and he stayed shut up, August C. Roberts added. Today, Bender manages a motel in California. We still correspond, but he refuses to discuss flying saucers. I think I need to stop for this break right now.
Okie dokie. 4 minutes.
Just a small town girl living in a lonely world. She took the midnight train going anywhere. Just a city
Read this other, this paragraph. The three men in black shut him up, and he stayed shut up, August C. Roberts added. Today, Bender manages a motel in California. We still correspond, but he refuses to discuss flying saucers. In my opinion, Lucchesi said, the men in black are representatives of an organization on this planet, but they are not from any known bureau in our government. I believe both these men and the UFOs come from some civilization which has flourished in a remote area of Earth, such as the Amazon, the North Gobi Desert, or the Himalaya Mountains. It is possible that these are underground civilizations, like in inner Earth. I have a feeling that someday there will come a slow knocking at my own door, Gray Barker wrote, and they knew too much about flying saucers. They will be at your door, too, unless we all get wise and find out who the three men really are. Howard Menger, a personable contactee, who claimed to have been taken inside a flying saucer and to have talked with the aliens, said that when he was living in Highbridge, New Jersey, in 1957, two men in dark business suits came to call on him. They flashed authentic-looking credentials and claimed to be agents from a government bureau, Menger told Steiger. They looked like ordinary people. They warned me to quit talking about flying saucers and to drop my research. We had quite an argument, and they claimed to have considerable power. Whether this was power of influence or over ordinary people, I don't know. In an open letter to all UFO researchers, which was published in a 1966 issue of Saucer Scoop by the late Joan Rittenauer, later O'Connell, Steiger's co-author of Flying Saucers Are Hostile and New UFO Breakthrough. Alan Day Letters. Researcher John A. Keel set forth his opinion that the men in black are the intelligence arm of a large and possibly hostile group. After discussing various types of contact, Keel went on to say that he considered the men in black to be professional terrorists, and among them, their many duties is the harassment of the UFO researchers who become involved in cases which might reveal too much of the truth. Keel's pursuit of the silencers led him to uncover some extreme cases of personal abuse in which certain contactees or investigators have been kidnapped by three men in a black car. The researcher notes that it is nearly always three men who subject the victims to some sort of brainwashing technique that leaves him in a state of nausea, mental confusion, or even amnesia lasting for several days. Keel's open letter in Saucer Scoop concluded with words of admonition and warning. We are now on a vicious merry-go-round, and we are caught in the middle of this bizarre conflict. Contacts are being made, then suppressed, on a dizzying scale. Information is being gained and lost at an ever-increasing pace. One of the ironies of all this is that no policeman in his right mind associates black cars, kidnappers, amnesia victims, and black eyes with the UFO phenomenon. Many of these cases never get beyond local police departments. Neither the FBI nor any other central government agency is engaged in collecting information on these aspects. Even local newspapers seldom take notice of these cases, since the victims are often children and teenagers. Most newspapers make an effort to protect young people by suppressing crime news involving them. Because the official law enforcement agencies are unwilling or unable to cope with this growing situation, it becomes the responsibility of the private civilian investigator to collect and collate the full details on these incidents. The hazards of such investigations are obvious, but the job must be done, and it must be done fast with courage and intelligence. I'm glad they do it. I admire them for their courage. All of this has been brought upon us because we have wasted 20 years chasing lights in the sky and fussing with the Air Force. We have allowed a serious and volatile situation to develop under our noses while we played with the aimless speculations about the origin and nature of those rather insignificant vehicles overhead. We must switch our attention from the vehicles to the occupants. The menace is not in our skies. It is on the ground. And at this moment, it is spreading like a disease across the country and the world. It's interesting. Oh, wait a minute. I see. Hold on. I was going to say it's interesting. We aren't talking about it with all the government stuff going on today. But now I see this next paragraph. Let's see what it says. In his address to the 1967 Congress of Scientific Ufologists, Keel told of his personal mission to track down the silencers. He said that dark-complected mystery men had sometimes silenced saucer sighters before the witnesses had time to report the sightings. On occasion, Keel said he had arrived on the scene within moments after the mysterious silencers had departed. According to Keel, the men in black visited and silenced 8 communities in Washington State in May 1967. Several homes in Long Island were unwilling hosts to the silencers in June. The UFOs don't want us to know where they are from, Keel stated. They have been lying to contactees since 1897. Keel explained this reference by stating that the first men in black may have appeared in Texas in 1897, when, according to newspaper accounts, some pottery had fallen from a mysterious airship. The next day, a dark-suited man of Oriental complexion arrived in town and bought up the strange fragments. How did representatives of the U.S. government feel about the silencers circa 1967? We have checked a number of these cases, Colonel George P. Freeman, Pentagon spokesman for Project Blue Book, was quoted as saying, and these men are not connected with the Air Force in any way. Colonel Freeman went on to say that by posing as Air Force officers and government agents, the silencers are committing a federal offense. No other U.S. security group claimed the MIB in 1967, nor will they in 2013. It has never been within the line of duty of any government agency to threaten a private citizen or to enter his home without a search warrant. Right. I'm going to believe that. Okay, get over myself. No government agent is empowered to demand surrender of private property by any law-abiding citizen. Stop it. Dave's laughing his head off. All of a sudden, he starts laughing his head off. He says, you and your comments. And he's saying, your comments are what everyone enjoys the most on my side. Well, you expect me not to comment? It's, oh, no, no, they want me to comment. Okay. That's good, because I will. You make me laugh when you laugh like that. Oh, my gosh, I wish you guys could hear Dave. I really, really wish you could hear him like I do. He says some of them might not want to. He might become the Dave man. You are in a mood. Okay. Let me get on with the book, okay? All right, back to the book. Oh, where am I? As visitations of the MIB have occurred to most serious UFO researchers, so too, the Steigers have received a number of peculiar interactions that seem related to this phenomena. Stop it. Individuals who discussed UFOs with them or reported sightings of aerial phenomena claim to have received telephone calls from unpleasant individuals who warned them not to contact the Steigers again. Another situation. A friend touring in London, England, suddenly found his path on the sidewalk, blocked by three dark-suited men of Asian appearance, who inquired if he knew the Steigers. Then, when he recovered from shock and admitted he did, he was told to inform them. He was told to inform them that they would soon receive a visit from them. I think that was typos in some way, shape, or form. Another situation. An associate of the Steigers, a former detective with numerous law enforcement contacts, said that an automobile seen following their car was not recognizable as any known make of automobile and had bogus license plates. Wonder if that was the same vehicle that picked my grandma, my great-grandma, up and took her from the corner to her sister's house. And then disappeared. Another situation. Upon several occasions after checking into hotels and picking up... excuse me. And picking up the room telephone to check with the front desk. Voices had been heard discussing the Steigers' arrival. The voices fall immediately silent when challenged as to who is on the line. Another situation. Angry communication from individuals claiming that Brad Steiger had engaged in crude and rude behavior at lecture appearances have been silenced. When Brad proved that he had not been in those particular cities and had given no lectures on the dates at which those events were alleged to have occurred. Now they're even impersonating people. Sometimes the Steigers wonder if the UFO silencers are really from a secret branch of government. Prior to the Steigers' lecture near a major U.S. Air Force base, the sponsoring group proudly showed the Steigers their new state-of-the-art sound and recording equipment worth in excess of $1 million. They assured the speakers that audience members would have access to tapes of the lectures within minutes after the evening's events concluded. Then, in panic and complete confusion, the sound engineers discovered that Sherry's lecture was completely blank. Even though sound engineers swore that they constantly monitored the recording process while she spoke, perhaps the tape was blank because Sherry had disclosed some aspects of her research that have never been publicly revealed. Perhaps. Once over dinner at a Chinese restaurant in New York City in 1966, John A. Keel gave Brad several accounts about the kind of paranormal harassment that he had undergone since beginning his investigation of the Mothman near Point Pleasant. Most unsettling were his accounts of the infamous three men in black who had visited him, threatened him, and given him a remarkable display of their abilities. Keel confided that he had observed a repertory of preternatural talents that had profoundly demonstrated that those particular MIB were beings beyond the ken of mortal men. Just exactly what is the silence group that seems determined to make a sinister battleground of flying saucer research? Are they, in spite of official denials, agents from a top-secret U.S. government agency, which knows the answer to the flying saucer enigma and has been commissioned to keep the truth from the American public? Could they be agents from another terrestrial political system that endeavors to guard its secret just a bit longer? Or, as some researchers have theorized, could the silencers and the UFOs be coming from an older terrestrial race that has survived and become more technically advanced as it thrives in some remote region of Earth? Whoever composes this persistent silence group either know, or give the impression of knowing, a great deal more about the universe than we, at our present level of scientific knowledge, have been able to guess. Here's a new section. Oh, it's a long one, too. Oh, well. The Thing on John's Bed by Pastor Robin Swope. As a late baby boomer, I experienced much of the 60s counterculture. Free love and free drugs were the motto of the times in which I grew from childhood to adolescence. I had many a friend who never made it to adulthood, and if they did, by the time of this writing, they are more than likely consigned to the care of a nursing home or an adult care facility. Observing the negative effects and the inevitable consequences suffered by many of those who abandoned themselves to the age of Aquarius served as a warning for me. Johnny was a friend of mine who loved getting high. One night, after a long evening of partying, he went home to his basement bedroom to listen to some relaxing music in the dark. He did not know how long it was before a loud sound roused him from his half slumber. With a quick flip of a switch, his nightlight came on and he sat up to see what had caused the commotion. That was when he saw the thing scurry across the floor. It had quickly made its way from the bathroom to duck behind a pile of clothes to the left of his bed. He could barely discern what exactly it was, but it was small, short, and bipedal. It ran faster than his car, and it had made the 4-foot run in a split second. It was also very dark in color. It was not a squirrel. This was the northeastern United States, so it could not have been any kind of monkey. The odd thing was that was what it looked like, a miniature human scuttling across the floor. It did not slump its back as it ran from the restroom to the pile of clothes in the corner. No, it looked like a husky little man in the dark as it passed into the pile of soiled apparel. Panicked by We have 4 minutes. Okay, I'll do what I can in 4 minutes. Panicked, Johnny was unsure as to what to do next. He decided to stay in the safety of his bed, and he pulled the covers up a bit to hide in the safe and warm self-made cocoon. As he sat there looking into the dark recesses of the basement for any sign of movement near the laundry pile, he was sure he saw something in the back of the room. It darted to and fro as if it were trapped in the semi-darkness of the room. It appeared to stay in the safety of the shadows, so it could not be fully seen by the young teen in his bed. However, its frantic movement betrayed Johnny's observation that it was clearly seeking escape. Soon the movement abruptly stopped. The shadow grew larger as the thing came closer to the darkness, slowly making its way to the edge of the bed. In the seconds when it disappeared at the bed's edge, Johnny did not know whether to feel relief or panic. Had it retreated to his worst nightmare to plague him no more? Or was it lurking under his bed, waiting for him to come out from under the covers so that it might do its diabolical deeds upon his soft pink flesh? The seconds seemed to span an eternity as Johnny waited for a movement from above the bed or under it. Then, as the horror of the reality that was to befall him permeated his mind, his spine became as a frozen icicle, hanging down from a lonely, woe-begone ledge. He felt a tug on the comforter that he had so desperately pulled right to his body, tight to his body, and a single lone hand of impish size came over the edge of the bed. It was soon followed by its equally unwelcomed twin. The comforter was pulled down from Johnny's clutching hands as the weight of the thing bore down at its edge. Soon, the full body of the being came into sight. It had a face circled in dark, oily hair, and its dark skin glistened in the ambient lighting. It almost looked human. If a human face could have been forged in the depths of hell by a creator who had no pattern with which to form it. The thing had the basics of twin eyes and ears, but they were both disproportionate and at odd angles. The mouth twisted in a grotesque grin and opened to reveal teeth that made no sense for the small confines from which they had emerged. Should we leave it there and continue next week, Nancy?
Well, yeah, I guess we better.
I think so, too.
Oh, my goodness.
That'll bring you all back to find out what happens.
Well, I thought you might stop it when the first hand came up on the bed and was pulling. You know, that would have been...
Yeah. I thought about it.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so... Yeah, up comes Jamie Bates, and... she's just going to be telling her story today, she says. I didn't listen to it yet.
Okay.
So, and then you'll be back at 7 o'clock.
Yeah. With my dilemma.
Thank you, Dolly.
Thank you. Bye-bye.